There were multiple gunshots, and it continued for a long period of time. And finally, there was some return fire, thank God, from the Capitol Police, who were there guarding our majority whip. He has security with him. Two of our great Capitol Police folks were injured, saving our lives, because we were sitting ducks.
That was Congressman Chuck Fleischman talking about their situation yesterday and the fact that Capitol Police saved their lives. Joining us now, Dan Bongino, former Secret Service agent, heard regularly on WMAL, and a good guy to talk about the security arrangements yesterday. Dan, I was very struck by the fact that those congressmen, of course, expressed such sincere gratitude for just being able to look up and see the good guys firing back yesterday in that scary situation.
Yeah, and I think it'll surprise a lot of people in the general public who, one, they think the Secret Service protects members of Congress. They don't. It's U.S. Capitol Police. But secondly, they only protect the leadership. These guys, the members of Congress, the rank-and-file members, do not have security details. They don't even have what we would call in the security field door-to-door protection, many of them, meaning they pick them up in the morning and drop them off. They're out there on their own doing their own thing. And you know, I don't think anybody's suggesting that we provide full 24-hour coverage to, you know, 535 members of the House and Senate. But I think after yesterday's incident, we certainly have to look at reevaluating how we do this. Maybe a incorporation of some local police officers when they go back to the district. But yesterday was a tragically eye-opening event.
It did expose some interesting security imbalances in the way that we handle VIPs in the United States. I know that, for instance, military generals will often travel with armed aides. You've got members of Congress who are heavily protected inside the Capitol building, but obviously have no protection unless they're like a member of leadership outside of that building. As you're staring at this, what do you think are some of the possible security solutions to protecting, say, your average member of Congress?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, when I was in the Secret Service, there's an obvious advantage. Our plate of protectees is really small. It's the president, the vice president. The only time the Secret Service really gets busy with an increased protectee load is during the United Nations General Assembly, because we protect foreign heads of state, and those foreign heads of state will come in and during the UN, and it'll cause a bit of a headache for them, you know, protectee-wise. But with Congress, you have 535 members. I mean, to get a 24-hour security detail on all of them would just be, it's not logistically possible, at least at this point. The best solution going forward, and I'm sure the Capitol Police is already working on this now, is to, you know, these guys are not in D.C. all the time. They split their time about 50-50 between their districts and D.C., is to pick up local sheriffs, you know, NYPD when they're in New York, D.C. Metro, and use those in-place assets already to maybe help secure these guys when they're in town, especially when they have a heightened threat level. I mean, some of them have gotten actual death threats, and there's really no excuse in a civilized constitutional republic to allow that kind of stuff to happen to elected political folks, and regardless of their political ideology. It's unacceptable.
Representative Barry Loudermilk is proposing to allow members who are allowed to conceal carry in their home state to be able then to also carry in the district. Would that be something acceptable?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, Mary. I mean, when I ran for Congress in Maryland, it was the election night, we thought we won the race. It wasn't until about 4 days later when they started counting the absentees, we figured out we'd lost. And it was during that period where I remember having this conversation with my wife, where I said, man, you know, thank God I've got this Secret Service FLEOSA carry permit where I can still carry my weapon. And it, you know, maybe not in the Capitol, but around D.C. And I thought to myself, gosh, these guys don't have any protection at all, and they can't carry weapons. That's insane. I think it's a good idea. I wish that idea, however, was applicable to every other citizen as well. I mean, Barry Loudermilk's a really good guy, and I'm not trying to impugn his motives, but I just wish everybody had the ability, if you're a law-abiding citizen, to actually protect yourself, not just members of Congress.
I was just going to say, as a follow-up, that is exactly my problem with this. Now they know, I mean, it's terrible, but this is how the rest of us feel. And to have what is considered a protected class because they're more valuable than everyone else, to me, flies in the face of the Constitution that says we're all equal under the law.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Loudermilk's a big Second Amendment defender. I know that for a fact. And I'll take what we can get if we can get it done incrementally. But I'd like to see national reciprocity where if you're a resident of the state of Florida like I am now, and I have a concealed carry permit, that my constitutional rights don't evaporate when I drive to Georgia or back to visit friends in Maryland. I mean, no one says to you in Maryland, if a state trooper pulls you over, hey, that's a Florida driver's license. You have no right to drive up here. And that's not even in the Constitution. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say, you know, the right to free speech and to drive anywhere. But that's not, you know, that right's protected, but your right to protect yourself isn't. It's absurd.
Okay, I want to ask you, Dan, about the Capitol Police response yesterday. There were two officers there who engaged the shooter. And I saw some reports that the Capitol Police officers actually sort of stepped out and were trying to draw the fire away from the congressmen, many of whom were huddled inside of the first base line dugout. Do you have any sense, first of all, of what tactics they may have actually employed yesterday and how that would transpire over a situation like that?
Yeah, I have no doubt that they resorted to their training in this. And I've tried to make this point to people over and over, having been with the Secret Service, but thankfully, having never been in a gunfight. These guys and women who were involved in this yesterday, the bravery was in when they agreed to do this job in the beginning, because they understood the minute they raised their right hand and swore in that this moment could happen, and tragically did yesterday. And they trained for another. We had a line in the Secret Service called get big, learn how to get big. In other words, when gunshots are coming down range at, you know, 1500 feet per second, everybody thankfully is going to duck, and you should. But that's not what these guys and women did yesterday. And that's not what the Secret Service is trained to do. They're trained to get big, not small. You know, everybody's ducking behind a fire hydrant in a car. These guys are running out from the car and re-engaging the shooter. And that's why I say, like, yesterday was unbelievably heroic. But the real heroism there is when they signed up for the job, because everyone who signs up for this line of work is agreeing to do something like that and to get big when everyone else is getting small.
Yeah, it was just amazing to see what they did. Now, where do we go from here, I guess, is the question. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was one of those seminal moments that kind of changes, you know, everything. And I, you know, I'm not one for hyperbole or exaggeration for effect, but I mean, listen, we're in a really hot and different political climate. They didn't like Reagan. They didn't like Bush. You know, we didn't like Obama. But I just have never seen anything like this, where the hate is so deep and penetrating that people feel the need to, you know, try to engage in a shooting gallery on a congressional baseball field. You know, we've got to dial it down. The temperature's got to be dialed down. And I'm not immune to this, guys. I mean, I'm on Twitter all the time. You know, I follow some of you. You can I get into it all the time.
And some of us follow you.
It's got to stop. Yeah, the violent stuff's got to stop. I mean, people on both sides, and I think this is more a problem on the left, and I say that with no reservations. But people on both sides need to say, hey, listen, hot political arguments, good to go. Hot personal violent arguments, not good to go under any circumstances. That's got to stop.
All right.
Absolutely.
Dan Bongino bringing some clarity on the security situation and some ideas on how we can protect members of Congress. Dan, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.